Pensacola, Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Let me see those hands in the air.
Hang on now. Hey, everybody jump. Jump, 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 jump. Everybody jump, jump, jump.
In 2018, so 4.5 years ago, I was elected by 32,000 votes out of over 8 million votes that were cast in the state of Florida. It was less than 0.5%. And if you look the previous decade in the state of Florida before me becoming governor, we had 1-point races. Governor, president, 2010, 12, 14, 16, 18. 1 point in all those marquee races. And so when I was getting ready to take office, a lot of people told me, and not unreasonably, trim your sails, don't rock the boat, closely divided state, very close election, just kind of keep your head down, don't make any waves, because you don't want to upset this political balance in the state of Florida in a way that's not going to redound to your benefit. And I understood that advice, but I also rejected that advice. My view.
So Governor DeSantis is running for president unofficially. Unofficially. No announcement. There's still that whole outstanding semi-question about the resign to run law, which is that if he were to declare that he's running for president, you know, that would change things and it would make him have to leave his post as the governor. It's up in the air, I would say, at the moment, and we still don't have any bills filed that would change that fact, so we'll see exactly what happens. But no, he's not officially running, but he did a month ago, go out to California and he gave a stump speech. I've listened to that speech. I didn't actually wind up cutting any of the cuts from it for you. I was thinking about this yesterday when I was working on this Hillsdale speech. I'm like, man, I should have played the other ones too, because that was clearly a stump speech. I mean, that the California speech was absolutely a stump speech. This was, it's a different environment going to Hillsdale College, this premier conservative liberal arts college in Michigan, and they put out Imprimis, which is this newsletter that's got speeches in it that they've been, I mean, it's a couple million subscribers around the country. It's a very good resource. Anyway, Hillsdale is this, you know, very well known among conservative circles and, you know, among liberals, they want to pretend it doesn't exist. But it's the model that he's patterned for the new college down in Sarasota that he's, you know, changed out the people on the board of directors to try to get that to be, you know, a little bit more balanced or even conservative to be kind of like the Hillsdale of the South. He's called it that, okay? But so he gave this speech at Hillsdale. And this was, when was this speech? I have it, I think it was Thursday, if I'm not mistaken, it was Thursday, because he gave a couple of different speeches around the state. And in this point, he's saying that, look, when he first got into office, you know, barely winning by 32,000 votes, everybody told him, okay, Florida's the purplest of purple states. Therefore, don't go crazy. You know, just, you know, go along, get along, don't rock the boat. Middle of the road, hold the governor's office. In order to hold the governor's office, you need to stay right down the middle, just a little bit to our side, right?
My view is I may have earned a mere 50% of the vote, but that entitled me to wield 100% of the executive power, and I intended to do that to advance our agenda and to deliver for the people of Florida.
So he had an agenda, he acknowledges. He wanted to accomplish that in the state of Florida, and since he had the power, he was going to do it. And but he says, look, there's two ways to wield power. One way is as a tyrant, doing whatever you want without regard for the law. The other way is as an elected official who operates within constitutional, both federal and state limitations, and has power and doesn't have certain other power. And so he set out to look at the forms of power he had.
Now, as you're preparing to do that, before we took office, I was mindful that being elected the chief executive of a state is not the same as being elected the dictator of the state, as much as the media tries to act like we do that. The reality is we've been able to be effective at wielding this power because I had an understanding of where the pressure points are, what the limits were.
You know, a dictator who would do something like I don't know, try to wipe out hundreds of billions of dollars of student debt without ever asking Congress for permission. You know, that, I mean, that kind of thing. You know, he didn't want to do that. So what he did instead was sought out clarity exactly about what his powers and limitations were.
I had all my staff compile all the list of all the constitutional, statutory, and customary powers of the government, of the governor. I had an agenda that I needed to get through a constitutional system that had checks and balances and separation of powers. So we had a good sense of where the pressure points were. We knew how we could use our executive leverage.
So what can I do? What can't I do? Where can I make a difference? And let's go make a difference. Let's go do the stuff that we're actually allowed to do, which, of course, is what he's been doing for, you know, a little over 4 years. And in that context, it's kind of interesting to hear him talk about the media with whom he has, an icy relationship. He does not respect them. He thinks that they are basically servants of the status quo. He doesn't particularly like to use the phrase deep state, but the idea that there's this ongoing power structure that the media used to be a check against that now it basically just goes right along with and doesn't really correct at all.
You have a media which basically serves this regime. They serve the intelligence agencies. They serve the entrenched establishment. And the media used to pride itself on speaking truth to power. And basically what they do is they defend the current arrangements against anybody who would deign to speak out against it or fight against it.
And so, Dane, by the way, I've never heard it pronounced dine, but, you know, okay, fine. The point is that he says, look, we're in control. We're running the show. And the media, who hates me anyway, because everything I do, they're going to criticize. Well, I'll tell you what, we're not going to worry too much about them. We're just going to keep doing the things that we do, and they can try chasing the dog.
We don't do palace intrigue. We don't do any drama. In fact, we don't talk to the media. We've had no leaks in the media for over 4 years, and they get very upset about that. The way we speak is through our actions. You never know what's going to happen the next day. You never know what announcement we're going to roll out. You never know what lever we're going to pull. But that's how we make news, by doing substantive things. And I think that that's served us well.
Which is, we're going to surprise them. Hey, look what we're doing today. Oh, crap. I didn't see that coming. So he basically was setting out in this first series of comments to Hillsdale, explaining the kind of governor that he's been, the kind of president he'll be. And, I mean, that's clearly what this speech is. And he says, look, I just don't believe in this notion of get in office and do the safe things.
Finally, I said, I am not going to be like some of these Republicans that get into office and they're like potted plants. They don't do anything. They play defense all the time. No, we're going on offense in the state of Florida.
Which clearly he has, right? Clearly that has been the agenda from the very beginning, and certainly even more so during COVID. So the question then is, okay, so if he flouted the advice that was given by all of the political class, if everybody, you know, in the wisdom category said, hey, go down the middle of the road, a little to the right, that's where you are, that's what your mandate is, you got barely 32,000 vote majority, you just, you know, be cool, bro. You know, don't lose Florida for the Republicans. We've worked a long time to have Florida locked up for the Republicans. Don't blow it. And he says, no, we're going to go full bore with the power we have to do the stuff that makes sense to us. We got the legislature two-thirds of the time in our pocket. And so then what happened? Well,
so we set out with kind of that frame of mind. And fast forward 4 years later, whereas we had initially been elected by 32,000 votes, we were reelected by over 1.5 million votes. We earned the highest percentage of the vote that any Republican governor candidate has ever received in the history of the state of Florida.
So the opposite of the prediction, right? The basic prediction was if you go to the right, you're going to lose your mandate and you're not going to get reelected. You're going to jeopardize it. Instead, he goes to the right pretty firmly and massively increases his popularity, his success rate, and the margin of victory the second time around, meaning that the media, the pundits, the advice givers were 100% wrong, exactly wrong about the state of Florida. So he doesn't let them decide what he's going to do or even what things they say he's going to respond to. He specifically talked about this issue of, you know, getting criticized by folks in what he calls legacy media.
When there's friction on an issue, that gets elevated. And so there are times when things that don't matter, if the media tries to poke me on, sometimes I'll just ignore. You know, people attack me all the time. You know, a lot of times I'll ignore because I want to elevate the things that I want to elevate.
So he's picking and choosing which things he thinks it's important to get the public thinking about and talking about and considering, not the things that, for example, the newspapers and the TV stations and the radio stations, okay, would put out there as the points of conflict or points of question that they would have. Which, by the way, that's a really interesting comment because you can contrast this style of leadership and of messaging with Trump's, right? Because, you know, it looks for all the world like we're going to have Trump versus DeSantis for the main fight within the Republican Party for the nomination for the next time around, right? So what is Trump's style of messaging? Everything, everywhere, all at once, every possible Twitter feed, all the time, right? I mean, he never lets anything go. There is no picking and choosing which things to, at least it doesn't seem like it, because it seems like he's everything. You know, some minor comment made by some minor commentator, some obscure place in Western Colorado. Oh, he's on it. You know, like there is no let it go. There is no bypass it. You know, everything is a war. And DeSantis is like, nah, I don't really have to pay attention to all that stuff. I can pick and choose the things that I care about. And we'll talk about that. And we'll do that stuff. No big deal. And he says, look, again, with all of the criticism that I've gotten, with all of the incredibly negative attention from legacy media, he says, and we still won by a huge landslide. What does that tell you?
The idea that I could go from 32,000 votes to 1.5 million votes, having more negative media attacking me than any governor, I would say, in probably modern American history, you know, that should show you that there are people out there, voters, they see through all the smoke. And they're just looking for some truth.
I think that's basically accurate. Now, there are some things he said in this context that I don't think are correct in terms of, you know, claiming that, you know, they don't do a lot with the media. They don't. And like, did you watch the last 2 years? He's always doing media events. But that was partially campaigning, right? That was campaigning. That was telling the world what he's doing and recognizing that if he does a press conference, that's really more of a policy statement, a show about which policies are going to do. It goes back to COVID when he was doing a lot of this stuff. And, you know, that's good advertising for him. So the idea of, you know, not dealing with the media, that's if you interpret him that way, that's not quite accurate. But effectively using media when it suits his purposes, I would say, yeah. 522 on News Radio 92.3. More on that. There's a lot of really substantial stuff in this speech. I learned a lot about him, his view of governance, his view of, you know, the federal system, what parts of it need to be changed, how to change them, what he would do as a president. You know, it was a very interesting speech. Half speech, half Q&A. And the Q&A stuff was even more interesting than just the speech itself. But we'll cover that throughout the morning. 523, again, this is at Hillsdale College in Michigan last week. 523 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. You know, when you're thinking about selling that home, thinking about buying a home, two transactions that will benefit to have a realtor helping you with. Well, which realtor? There's a lot of them. There's 3,000 here locally, about 3,000 different realtors you can pick from. And there's all different reasons that you might pick a different realtor, okay? All kinds of things you might like or not like about somebody. Here's one thing to consider. How many homes do they sell in a year? How many homes have they sold this year? You know, Christina Leavenworth and her folks at Levin Rinke Realty, they sold over 200 homes last year. I forget the number. It's like 230, I think, for the year. Anyway, they've sold well more than 200. In the first quarter of 2023, 36 sold and 29 under contract. Now, that was as of about 2 weeks ago, week ago, so I'm sure that, I mean, you know, the number's different now, but that's a lot, right? That's more than 65 homes already in the first quarter of the year. Keep this in mind. Out of those 3,000, 1,600 realtors have sold zero. More than 50% of the realtors on the MLS have sold zero homes so far this year. That's because most realtors at the end of the year have sold one or two or none. That's very common. Very few realtors are really doing the kind of business that Christina's doing. 20, in fact, so far have sold more than 20. 7 have sold more than 30. And she's got, like I said, 36 sold and 29 under contract. So when you're thinking about who you want to represent you and help you, do you want somebody who does it once a year? Or do you want somebody who does it 200 times a year? 723-9158 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Levin Rinke Realty.
When you're an innovative business, every blinking cursor, every blank page is an opportunity. What will you do with it? Will you make something better or create something new? Our Dell Technologies advisors provide you with tools and expertise to do incredible things. Because we believe there's an innovator in all of us. For advice on smart PCs powered by Intel vPro that's built for business, call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
The following message is sponsored by the Florida Department of Elder Affairs, the Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this radio station.
Sarah is 64 and loves to garden. Recently, her health insurance ran out, leaving her worried about more than just weeds. She called the Elder Helpline and spoke with a volunteer Shine counselor about her options. There, she received free, unbiased counseling on health insurance for those on Medicare. For more information or to volunteer, call 1-800-963-5337 or go to floridashine.org.
Testosterone levels are at an all-time low. Individual T levels decline 1% every year. Chalk, CHOQ, is the new champion of natural testosterone boosters. Chalk's main ingredient is clinically studied to naturally boost testosterone 20% in 90 days. Supercharge your masculinity and boost your daily energy with Chalk's Male Vitality Stack. For a limited time, our listeners will get 30% off at CHOQ.com with promo code USA. CHOQ.com, code USA.
Get your finances in order and become financially free with Dave Ramsey. Weekdays 1 to 4 after Brian Kilmeade on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm loving it.
Let's turn now to Kansas City, Missouri, where a 16-year-old is recovering from serious gunshot wounds. Two felony charges have been filed against 84-year-old Andrew Lester, who is accused of shooting a teenager who rang his doorbell by mistake. Attorneys for Ralph Jarl say the teen was trying to pick up his 11-year-old twin brother, but he went to the wrong address.
This is just a horrible story. I don't know if you've seen this in the news. It's been all over everywhere since yesterday. But basically, this 16 or 17-year-old kid, black kid, okay, goes to this address to pick up his younger brother. He had actually twin brothers, I guess. And goes to pick him up, and the account is that this old white guy, 80 plus, comes to the door, opens the door, and shoots him on the porch. He lives, thank God, and the white guy's in jail now. I've read conflicting reports about whether they think that race was involved in this. Of course, you read it first, and you think that way. I will say this: there are a couple of other stories over the last couple of days that, you know, just for context. There was a white girl driving with a bunch of friends in, I think, upstate New York, if I remember correctly, and they go up the wrong driveway, kind of a more of a rural area, and they get shot at by somebody in the house. A white guy shoots at them in the car and hits her, and she dies. They basically back out of the driveway and drive over to where they can get cell service and call for help, but she winds up dying. I believe he's been arrested in connection with this, and rightly so. Both of them, rightly so, getting arrested. And then you have this road rage incident in Florida where we've got, one guy and another guy honking and brake checking each other out on the highway. One throws a water bottle at the other one on the highway. The other one pulls out a gun and shoots at him and winds up shooting his young daughter in the car. The other one brings out his gun and shoots back and shoots the other one's young daughter in the car, who both live, thank God. The one who threw the water bottle has been charged. The one who did not throw the water bottle has not been charged. So I'm pro-gun. There are not everybody needs to have a gun. And we're seeing a lot of cases recently where some pretty awful things happen because people don't know the rules and don't obey them. 529 on News Radio 92.3, David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
And good morning, guys. The mayor of Akron, Ohio, asking for peace today after a grand jury decided not to bring charges against the officers involved in the shooting death of Jayland Walker. Dan Horgan asking for all demonstrations in the city to be peaceful. That shooting, of course, happened last June when 8 officers were involved in shooting the unarmed Walker. Robert Kennedy Jr. says he's planning to launch his run for Democratic nomination for president this week in Boston. Kennedy announced he'll be making a formal announcement on Wednesday in Boston. And SpaceX now targeting Thursday for their next attempt to launch the Starship rocket. The technical problems yesterday prevented the launch, but in a tweet they say it was a pressure valve that was frozen. So hopefully they'll get that up in the air.
I remember some issues about that, and there are some issues that seem sort of like that from past incidents. So I'm glad they didn't launch and have a problem that you can't fix, right? So that's good news. 5:30 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Right back to you, David. What do you have coming up, sir?
Hey, there's a groundbreaking later on this morning. We'll tell you all about it right after Fox.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Griskovich in a Russian court today at the start of his appeal hearing. He's charged with spying. He and the U.S. government strenuously deny the charges. Now, he stood in a glass and metal enclosure inside the courtroom, didn't say a thing. The 31-year-old is the first U.S. correspondent since the Cold War to be detained in Russia for alleged espionage. Russia's Vladimir Putin travels to military headquarters in Kherson in the Luhansk region in Ukraine while in Japan.
As Ukraine prepares to launch a counteroffensive to take back its land, to liberate its people and occupied territories, to stop the missiles, bombs, and drones which continue to rain down on its civilians, we stand with Ukraine.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken. Price of a gallon of regular remains at $3.67 overnight. That from AAA. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31, News Radio 92.3, 50 degrees right now. It is partly cloudy here in Pensacola. While the effort to determine whether or not the county can staff additional lifeguards at Perdido Key is still underway, they have moved forward with some additional signage. You'd notice one sign now with red lettering issuing a warning that lifeguards are not on duty there. Another new sign warning about rip currents and providing instructions on how to get out of them should you get caught in them. This coming just 2 weeks now after three people died trying to save four children from rip currents in an area, of course, with no lifeguards. New $6 million sports medicine facility on the horizon at UWF. Officials there are going to be breaking ground on the new Sandy Sansing Sports Medicine Center today. Athletic Director Dave Scott says they've expanded their athletic programs in recent years, and this should give injured players a place to rehab right on campus.
It's a great opportunity. It creates great academic learning spaces for our students on campus. It creates additional partnership with Andrews Institute to take care of our student athletes in a way that lets them rehab from their injuries and keeps them performing at a level that or get back to their normal level of athletic ability.
And it'll also give medical students a place to train and learn in their programs. A ceremony being held at 4 o'clock this afternoon today at the UWF campus to break ground on that new facility. Recent mass shootings across the nation, one just a few hundred miles away in Alabama, have local organizations now thinking about their safety here in our area.
When I see news reports about gun violence and just seeing scary things like that, it's important. And we want our children to be safe. And so we are thinking about that at Boys and Girls Clubs.
That is Leslie Mickles. Now, she's the president of financial advancement for the Boys and Girls Club of the Emerald Coast. And they run after school programs all the way from Escambia County to Walton County. Mickles says they've been having conversations about increasing their safety measures with locked doors and buzzed entry systems, intercoms. She says they also regularly hold active shooter drills so kids know what to do if something were to happen. A Pensacola woman facing a kidnapping charge, accused of pulling a child into a motel room against that child's will. 32-year-old Jaleesa Williams facing one count of kidnapping a minor. She's currently being held on $100,500 bond. Investigators say this incident happened on Sunday afternoon at the Motel 6 on Pensacola Boulevard. According to an arrest report, Williams was not coherent when questioned by investigators. Allegedly also had marijuana on her and some unknown pills, which have all now been sent off to FDLE to to be tested. 534, it's News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather.
Well, good Tuesday. A little bit warmer today, into the upper 70s. Sunny skies, though, and completely dry out there. Maybe a little bit chilly when you wake up on Wednesday morning with lows in the 50s, but we'll continue with highs in the upper 70s to lower 80s through the remainder of the work week. Low temperatures should get into the 60s by Thursday, and we'll see small rain chances, some more humidity starting this weekend. That's your weather forecast. I'm meteorologist Joseph Neubauer reporting here at WEAR News. Have a great day.
And right now it's 50 degrees, partly cloudy in Pensacola, 58 in Gulf Breeze, and 46 in Milton. Your next news at 6 o'clock. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
News Radio Pensacola is your source for informative, local, dependable news and talk. Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay gets you a breakdown of the local issues from the county commission meetings to new developments. Pep Talk gets you local expert opinions on everything from gardens to HVAC. Brian Kilmeade interviews the national newsmakers. Dave Ramsey helps you become debt-free. Pensacola Right Now infotains on your drive home. Local and Fox News at the top and bottom of every hour. And traffic on the fives during your drive time. News Radio 92.3. Informative. Local. Dependable.
The Florida Department of Health in Escambia County works to protect, promote, and improve the health of everyone in your community. Listen in today at 10:30 to the Pensacola Expert Panel when Director Marie Mott will give a public health update. That's today at 10:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Bands on the Beach is back. Bring a lawn chair or a towel and enjoy the live music at the stage on Pensacola Beach. There's plenty of room to spread out, enjoy the sand, the sunset, and great live music every Tuesday night at 7. This week, the White Sands Panhandle Band takes the stage. They're one of the hottest bands in bluegrass country and rockabilly on the Gulf Coast, and you'll hear everything from Marty Stewart and Charlie Daniels at Bands on the Beach Tuesday, brought to you by the Santa Rosa Island Authority. Pets and glass, not allowed.
Listen to local talk, national talk, local news, and national news on News Radio Pensacola on the FM dial at 92.3, 95.3, and on the AM dial at 1620.
Good morning, 5:37 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Yesterday, we had a chance to talk to Dan Burden. He is the guy who invented the term road diet. He's a walkability pioneer, one of Time's most influential, listed most influential urban planners, and a guy who's been to, you know, I mean, he worked as a bicycle coordinator for FDOT. He's gone to China to, you know, consult on bicycling. He several thousand cities in the United States where he has, or several thousand locations where he has done, you know, audits, walking audits to kind of figure out how do we make the modern city shaped a little bit more pedestrian and bicycle friendly instead of so car friendly over the years. Yesterday we talked to him. Now, two notes. Number one, the walking audit that happened yesterday morning, so that's obviously over with. And my fault, he said Wahoos, but then he texted me a little bit later and said, no, it was at City Hall. So I know a couple of people actually showed up and were kind of disappointed. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I just didn't have any good way to get that to the people who needed to know the correction. So I apologize for that. The other one is that last night, the meeting at Brownsville Civicon that he's a part of, when we talk about that in the interview, that's from yesterday. Those are over. I don't want anybody to like go there tonight, you know, thinking they're going to catch this. That's not the case. Anyway, Dan Burden, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Well, thank you, Andrew. It's great to be back in Pensacola. I was here in my Navy years ago.
Oh, yeah, right, at Ellison Field back when that was operational in that regard. So, yeah, great to have you back. So when you go, you're doing a thing where you're going to be walking around downtown today, actually, at 8:30 this morning. If anybody wants to join you, that starts at 8:30 at the Wahoo Stadium. When you're doing these walking audits, which you've done loads of them, like thousands of them around the world, what are you looking for?
I'm looking for, first of all, how people are using the streets or the environment, and are the motives behaving? Are the pedestrians there in abundance? Are there diverse people like there was yesterday in downtown? I was totally amazed. But we're also looking for what design mistakes were made at certain locations, the streets, the intersections, and what can we do to bring back the life and the vitality to whichever street we're on.
If I can say it this way, and you correct me if I'm wrong, you're the expert, the thrust in urban design for decades was how do we accommodate the cars? Because that's going to bring the people, and that's what we want to take care of. Pedestrians and bicyclists are the problem. And if I understand it properly, the goal of modern urban design is how can we accommodate the bicyclists and the pedestrians? The cars are the problem. Do I have that about right?
You nailed it. And I think the thing I like to say is for the last 60, even 70 years, we focused on the speed and the efficiency of moving cars, and we killed downtowns. We killed almost any area we built because we were plowing right through a neighborhood as opposed to trying to build a neighborhood and reduce the number of trips people need to make in a car. Now we've figured it out. Not everyone has yet, but we're starting to realize that downtown, especially, it's not about speed. In fact, the lower the speed, the more a downtown will thrive. And the same is true when you go through anyone's neighborhood. It should not be about speed. It should be about how you're supporting the local retail life and social life of the streets.
So when you get a place, like, you know, obviously we've done this pretty heftily with Palafox, for example, but, you know, we're trying to do it in other places. When you get a place converted sort of back to the walkable, bikeable, as opposed to the car and speed facilitation model, what happens in those areas? What is the end result of doing it the way you want to see it done?
You see economic vitality take off. A street that I helped inspire, Lancaster, California, it used to be a five-lane behemoth monster, and people just sped right to the downtown. We converted it, believe it or not, from five lanes down to just two. We added parking, and we slowed the traffic from what had been nearly 40 miles an hour through a downtown down to about 15. And over $750 million in new investments came to that downtown. It's now one of the hot spots in all of the greater Los Angeles County. And it's just an example. Yep.
So you see that, you see growth, you see spending, you see people want to live in a place, you see property values go up because it's a more valuable place to live. We use the word, you know, live, work, and play, and I'm sure that's a phrase that you guys use quite a bit. Dan, okay, so I would describe myself as a suburban dweller, okay? I live in not downtown Pensacola. I live in a place where it's mostly houses with a school, and, you know, you kind of drive to everything, all right? So when I go downtown, the car is pretty important to me. I'm not biking downtown. It's too far. And I go downtown, and as a driver, I find that my downtown is becoming more and more frustrating to me because of parking, because of growth, because of various things. And it feels like walkability is great for the people who live there, but what about for the people who are visiting?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, the more a downtown thrives, the better the entire community, in fact, the entire region. So if you want an area, a town to recover from the over-influence of the car, then you've really got to tame the car, and you've got to make it to where it's desirable to come downtown and visit. In fact, the important thing is, are you attracting jobs? Are you retaining the successful businesses or helping build the businesses? Those are the indicators we look for. Is there a greater social life to the street? Do people aggregate on a corner, congregate, and do you see people lingering in a place? All these are the signs I look for. But the cool thing is the more successful a downtown and other areas of a community come alive, then there's less traffic. It's amazing. Cambridge, Massachusetts is a great example. They have quadrupled the density of folks living in Cambridge. At the same time, they reduced their traffic because they made it walkable, they made it bikeable, they made it transit friendly, and now people not only love their town, but when they graduate from whatever university they're attending, they want to stay there and live there. And I know that's a big issue in Pensacola. People want to see their grandchildren, their children come back to the city. So all these steps help.
I suppose that when I'm thinking about the picture of a downtown that's very, you know, bike and walker friendly and very, you know, lingering, as you say, kind of that mindset and that behavior, the exact opposite of that would be a street like you went to University of West, or you know, did some stuff at University of West Florida. And of course, you know, Ellison Field, but 9 Mile. Mm-hmm. Okay. 9 Mile these days here in Pensacola is, you know, it's 45 miles an hour and everybody's going to somewhere else. And all along 9 Mile, you have places where people go, they stop their car, they get out, they buy their whatever it is, and they get back in their car and they go. It's sort of the exact opposite, where it's all built around the car and quick and get your thing done, as opposed to go and hang out at a place and meet people and linger and do all of that. Am I kind of thinking of these things in the right contrast?
You really are. And I think the important thing is you start where you're going to have the greatest impact, and downtown is now approaching where it's thriving. But you have to rescue the other areas of the community as well. And 9 Mile, which I used to bike when I was in the Navy, which is just, I've grown like it was on steroids, it still needs some love, and it needs to be rescued as well. But it may not be the first next or the next big project, but it needs it's time to be remade into a better place for people to come to. Yeah.
Hey, last thing, and I know you're going to talk about all this stuff tonight, and that's why I wanted to give people a little taste of what they're likely to hear from you tonight at the Brownsville Community Center. But just kind of the last quick thing is, because you were the pioneer of the concept of a road diet and the term for a road diet, maybe just take a moment, because we've talked about this quite a bit, but I think it's important for people to understand what that term means and what the goal is. It's not just safety and creating safety for pedestrians. It's about transforming areas through which cars travel, right?
That's correct. And essentially, a road diet is anytime you take a lane away. And for example, right in front of where I'm staying, there's a left turn lane that's got to be 200, 300 feet long. And as I studied it, I said, why do we even need a right turn lane? I meant the right turn lane. And so it could be as simple as that, or it could be a five-lane road going to a four-lane road with a nice median, or it could be a three-lane road, a five-lane to a three-lane road. And the cool thing is the traffic works better. If the numbers are crunched, a road diet is one of the most safe things we can do with a road and the most civilizing things we can do. And we'll talk about all these things tonight, so we hope people will turn out.
Outstanding. Yeah, it's funny, because as a driver, I find the things that slow me down irritating, but if I were to really think about it, it winds up getting me there in a more efficient and safer way. So it's funny that you get irritated into a better life, so to speak, a little bit. Dan Burden, he is one of the foremost pioneers on the concept of walkability. Again, he was a bicycle coordinator for FDOT. He's done this all over the world, and he will be here tonight as part of the Civicon series, speaking at the Brownsville Community Center at 6 to 7:30. You can hear that. Or if you want to join him and see firsthand the walking audit of downtown Pensacola that starts at 8:30 a.m. this morning at Wahoo Stadium. Dan, thanks so much for the time. Thanks for what you're doing trying to make our societies a little bit better and more enjoyable. I appreciate it. Great to meet you.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. And by the way, just in case you missed it right at the beginning, the Civicon presentation at Brownsville was last night. Okay, that already happened, so don't go to Brownsville tonight. I mean, feel free to go to Brownsville tonight at 6, but you just won't hear a speech. The other thing is that walkability study, the audit, that was also yesterday morning, and it was at City Hall, not at Wahoo's. He had texted me after the interview and said, oh, hey, you know, sorry, it was actually here. I'm like, bummer, now what would I do? You know, because I don't know who's likely to go, and he can't just tell it 100 times because the wrong people aren't going to hear it. Anyway, so if you went to that, I know some people at least did and were annoyed that they went to the wrong thing, and I'm so sorry. I would have told you better if I'd have known better. 5:49 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Gumbo Yaya Cook-Off returns to Seville Quarter Saturday the 22nd. That's this Saturday. Amateur and professional teams compete for bragging rights. Best gumbo in Pensacola. $15 in advance, $20 at the door. Indoor judging and public tasting begins at 4 o'clock to benefit the Big Brothers and Big Sisters of Northwest Florida. Northeast Sertoma presents Hogfest 2023 at Pensacola Harley-Davidson the following Saturday, the 29th. $100 ticket. That gets two people into an entry and a drawing for a new Harley-Davidson. Every Child, a Reader, a Scambia, and Pathways for Change are the beneficiaries, the operating charities that are dealing with this. And Dixon School of the Arts and Sciences is proud to announce Dixon Dub Friday, April 28th. That's a week from this Friday. At the Hilton on Pensacola Beach, Dixon Dub will feature teams competing in lip-sync battles and, of course, raises funds for the Dixon School of the Arts and Sciences. Get your tickets now at newsradio923.com. Thinking about buying a next vehicle, Frontier Motors, a great place to shop. Good quality cars that are a year or two, maybe three years old. They've got low miles, great condition, and good prices. And, you know, part of the advantage of going there is selection, because they've got about 300 cars, trucks, vans, all on the lot at one time. And so you can really compare, you know, the Ford to the Honda, the Toyota to the Volvo. You know, you can really side by side compare the different varieties of the kind of thing that you want. And I suggest you do that. In fact, drive several, drive five or six. Include one to drive that's not in your normal list. Like maybe you've never driven a minivan or a truck. Or, you know, a Jeep. I don't know. Drive something different just to experience it. And then maybe what you discover is, yeah, that's why I don't have one. Or maybe you're like, oh, can I drive a different one? You know, like you might discover that you love something. And that's the point. Take advantage of that wonderful selection of almost new vehicles at Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
This is Tort Talk with personal injury lawyer Terrence A. Gross.
Hi, this is Terrence A. Gross. Did you know that Floridians can stack uninsured motorist coverage? If you have three vehicles with $25,000 stacking UM, that equates to $75,000 in total coverage. Therefore, always choose stacking coverage if you have more than one vehicle in your household.
Tort Talk is brought to you by Terrence A. Gross. Call 434-3333 or check him out at grossandschuster.com.
Investing in times like these can be scary if you don't have the right person at the helm of your finances. Armada Advisors will put you on the right path for success. Join Wesley Odom with Armada Advisors to find a better way you can successfully invest your money and enjoy your retirement. Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel this morning at 10.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
It's the biggest party of the year. Unfiltered, off-kilter, and a little unhinged with PLT's Cabaret Off-Broadway. Saturday, May 6th, Cabaret's Playhouse theme transforms the theater and surrounding block into an indoor-outdoor entertainment complex, seamlessly fusing local art and celebration to showcase art as the life of the party. Come immerse yourself in the best of Pensacola's art scene. Get your tickets now before it sells out at the Pensacola Little Theater box office or online at PensacolaLittleTheater.com.
Serving overseas was just the beginning. We might be home from war, but our mission continues in communities all across the country. It's why we're out there in times of peace and crisis, providing meals to the hungry and supplies to the sick. It's why we're giving strength to those who are too weak and bringing resources to those without them. Service doesn't stop when we're done serving. It's what makes us the VFW. Learn more at vfw.org.
Fox News personality Brian Kilmeade, afternoons at 11, before Dave Ramsey, on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
Good morning, 5:53 here on News Radio 92.3, informative local Cindy Lauper. I'm Andrew McKay. You can never really have enough Cindy Lauper. I mean, that's just true.
I agree.
I think that's accurate. You know this song? Is this one familiar to you?
No.
This is Witness.
Oh.
Yeah, I know exactly.
I know everything from She's So Unusual.
There you go. I think this is off of Shebop. I don't know. I go, I have this habit of, I go back and listen to old albums from, you know, now that you can listen to everything online. you know?
Yes.
And I'll go listen to things that catch my attention. Like, you know, I loved that artist back in the day and I bought one album or something like that. And then I'll be like, well, what other albums do they have? I wonder, you know?
Yeah, so, you always find the deep cut. That's what I love. Yeah.
There's so much great music out there and so much that sometimes I feel ashamed that I didn't know it.
Sure.
You know, like I remember when, and this is going to be painful, but, you know, somebody said, man, that first Cars album is fantastic. I'm like, well, I have Heartbeat City, you know, how good can it be? Oh my God. You know,
that's their worst album.
Right. And you know all the songs from that. Right, and then this is fantastic.
Yeah, no, their single title, Candy Gap, they're all really
good. And then there was one time, so Van Halen was always, you know, one of my top three bands. Mm-hmm. And then I just kind of looking around, and one time it occurred to me, like, I wonder if there's any albums by Van Halen I don't know about. And I went out and found it was the demo for Van Halen 1. Mm-hmm. And so it was all of the, like, before it was produced
right.
versions of all of their songs. And it's like an hour and a half long.
It's interesting. And you can tell. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's not just great, but it's so primitive great. It's half the time it's like this section of that song is in the wrong song. Because mm-hmm. the end version that got turned into an album version, not necessarily on one or two or Diver Down, but the producer
sure.
moved parts around. I'm like, oh, that's so wild. You
Isn't
know, like,
neat? Yeah.
Love that stuff.
Yeah.
David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
White House says President Biden has spoken with that black teen that was shot after ringing the wrong doorbell in Missouri last week. Biden wished 16-year-old Ralph Yarl a speedy recovery. Of course, as you mentioned a few minutes ago, the prosecutors have charged a man in his 80s with two felonies for that shooting. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer will be temporarily replacing Senator Dianne Feinstein on the Judiciary Committee this week. Her absence has stalled confirmations of President Biden's judicial nominees. And apparently the bulk of TV and film writers getting closer to walking off the job, Andrew. This week, members of the Writers Guild of America authorized the strike. That means union leadership can now call a strike if the negotiations with the big studios fall apart. The writers apparently want better compensation for streaming shows.
Yeah, they've and like apparently some of their contracts that they've got now, the problem is that they're not getting paid as much because like seasons of things are only 10 episodes instead of 22, especially like with online. You know, it used to be built around the broadcast calendar, which,
right.
you know, you would get two seasons of, you know, 13 or whatever. And now they get one season of 10 and they don't get paid as much money. And like you said, all of the streaming rights or things that were DVDs or internet downloads, the original contracts weren't really written for that. In 2007, when they were on strike for 100 days, you remember that? They were on strike
yes.
for a while. And we were all kind of wondering, like, when's the TV going to come back? Because there's only so much third-rate reality TV you can watch in a lifetime.
Hey, you shut up.
Yeah, you're right. There's no limit. Anyway, that the economy lost $2 billion as a result of that. And, you know, obviously late night TV shows and those kinds of things. David, thanks so much for the update. I will tell you this, though, and this is...
Now eat your breakfast.
I'm probably thinking about this the wrong way, or maybe I'm thinking about it exactly the right way. And when I saw this news yesterday about them, you know, on the verge of declaring a strike, which would again mean no new content mm-hmm. for however long the strike takes, my thought was, thank God I get to catch up. Because I feel like there's so much out there that's really good.
Let me turn you on to something. Big Brother, I know. Have you watched it?
Like the first three or four seasons.
Oh, okay.
You mean the reality show where they're locked in the house and Julie Chen narrates everything
and
they have sex with everything?
Stuff. Yes, and okay. yes, and they try to hide it. But you know, okay, and you have this channel? Because we share streaming mm-hmm, services. Mm-hmm. You know you can watch that house 24/7?
Oh, thank you.
They have
thank
all
you,
these
no.
cameras. No, dude. You know. It's great.
No, we did. We watched the first couple of seasons of Big Brother.
I know,
and then
but
we're like,
now you can watch it 24/7. And they're not always doing stuff. You could just watch the house.
When
just,
I could be watching a Milton City Council meeting? Come on now.
You could have it on as a background.
Crazy
I
talk.
Love it. It's like you have eight new friends that you
no,
would never want
you.
To have as friends.
These are the worst friends ever.
Yeah, they're the worst people.
Yes.
Why would you want to watch it 24/7?
So,
right. I'm just telling
again,
anybody else out there.
I honestly, there's so much great content out there that we're all behind. It's like book. TV and movies have become books. You know, you remember, you know, a long time ago, you felt like you were supposed to watch. Maybe it's just me. You know, you could see all the movies and all the TV shows, or at least most of the major ones.
Right, right, sure.
And then, you know, with the proliferation of channels, and of course now with online, I mean, nobody can watch it all. Nobody can even come close to watching it all. But it's kind of like you used to always understand about books. There's so many books, nobody can read them all. Well, you know, now you can't read all the books and you can't watch all of the TV. So my thought was honestly. a pause. I can try to catch up a little bit. Because I'll even, yeah, like if they went on strike for 2 years, I'd still have plenty to watch.
You sure would.
It wouldn't be brand new stuff, but there would still be plenty of stuff out there. I mean, I'm watching The Wire, for goodness sake, right? 5:59 here.
I missed the boat on that, too, but isn't it great?
That's exactly right. Let's see. Fiesta Pensacola 2023 Crawfish Festival comes up Friday, April 28th through Sunday, April 30th in Seville Square and Fountain Park. Come see the Cat Crew. And big event, of course, newsradio923.com for more information.
Your home.